Well, I thought that this week you should do the intro song.
Right, I thought about this and I had like a whole idea planned out, but I never had enough time to execute it.
Was it? Is it like an insert in post here situation, or wing it? Maybe just wing it and see how it goes. You know, life's all about taking chances, Dan.
Oh man! Right, I'm kind of on the spot here now.
Yep.
Hang on, have we even started?
Yeah.
Really? Are we actually technically started? Oh, okay. Well, then, welcome everyone to episode 12.
Are we on episode 12? I mean, I know I can't take credit for like the first, however many episodes you did, but anyway, sorry, carry on.
We're on episode 12. It's flown by.
It really has.
I'm not going to talk about it anymore because I will get emotional, but. And we also hit 2,500 downloads.
Now that is crazy. That is so cool. Thank you, everyone, for listening and the people that reached out on Instagram and Twitter. You da bomb. We love you.
Da bomb, yo.
Are you putting off trying to do this intro song?
Yeah. Is it that obvious?
Yeah, noticed. Yeah.
Oh man.
You're not getting out of it, so hit us.
Right, okay. Right, okay, Alex, drop me a sick beat. Yo. What? Yo. My name is Dan, and I'm here to say BSR chess is the way.
I mean... And the slow clap turns into an eruption.
I thought that was part of the sick beat.
No. Oh, were you not done?
Oh my God, I was still about to carry on. No, I couldn't. I lost track.
It's always like you can rhyme once, and then it's like when you go in for the second rhyme, that's when you struggle and go, I've suddenly forgotten the entire English language.
I think I struggled on the first one. I mean, what does it mean? Is the way.
I mean,
is the way what?
It is the way, though, let's be honest. If you're listening to this, you are part of the movement, the way.
This is true. So anyway, why don't you tell the listeners what we was planning on chatting about this week?
Well, the plan, I guess, is basically, let me tell you what inspired it, listeners, before we deep dive. But
this is good.
I had a shocking realization the other week that as a 360 VR creator, I don't actually spend that much time watching 360 VR content, which is pretty terrible. And so I took to Facebook, as any millennial does, and I posted in the 360 professionals group, out of interest, you know, how many people here who are creating 360 on a professional level and on a hobbyist level, just interested in general, creators, how much time are you spending in a headset? And the replies were mind-blowing in terms of the majority of content creators are not watching stuff. So I was like, this is terrible. And we kind of all throughout this thread came to this realization of how on earth can we advocate for this medium if we're not consuming it and we're not. But also it's things like, obviously, we can learn so much from what each other are doing. So I then sat for a whole Sunday and made myself very, very sick by spending about 6 hours watching all sorts of 360 and VR content. Some of it, I mean, all of it in its own right, very, very valid experiments. And I think that's all we can hope for at this point in time. Yeah. Some of them more compelling than others. But yeah, my thoughts on this week's subject is, let's discuss directing 360. So, you know, what are you doing with your shots, experimenting with how you're kind of using 360 as a storytelling medium? Because we talk a lot about the tech and we talk a lot about the business side, but why don't we talk about the actual content? So I figured we could kind of deep dive into some of the experiences that we've watched in the past couple of weeks and maybe just kind of, you know, pull out some thoughts on what worked, what didn't work, in our opinion, that kind of thing. What do you think?
Sounds good. Why don't you kick off?
Well, why don't you kick off? Because I have many a thoughts, but I'm very interested to hear your opinions first.
Okay, right. So this is like, funny you should mention it, because when you brought this up to me the other day, last Sunday, when I was originally meant to be doing this, and then I forgot I was out.
Yeah.
Actually, part of my day, because I was in London, part of my day was actually going to a VR screening.
Oh, no way.
The Serpentine Gallery in Hyde Park.
That's really cool.
And basically, it was this film called Reality Inverse, and it was a fashion film, right?
As now, in, like, catwalk? Out,
this isn't... Kind of, yeah. Okay. Now, I said this wasn't... I mean, it was my idea, but I was, like, going with my friend who kind of works in that industry.
You mean so you're not a like fashionista?
No. Alex, you've seen me in real life how I dress. I'm definitely not.
I mean, you've got snazzy hats.
This is true. I can't lie about that. I do have a snazzy collection of hats. Yeah. But yeah, so it was almost like an industry exchange for both of us. It was like, here you go. You have a glimpse into my fashion world, yeah. But on the medium of VR, which is your world.
That's really cool.
So we got there. And I didn't really know what to expect other than it was like a fashion film. And I put the headset on, and I'll be honest, like I didn't know where I was meant to be looking.
Okay.
Like for the entire 6 minutes of the whole thing.
What was happening in it?
You know what? I couldn't even really tell you. Like one part there's like There's a model sat on the bed at one point, and then she gets up and walks off, so you follow her, and then she disappears, and then suddenly she's like the other side.
Oh.
And you're like, oh.
But you've missed it because you're looking the wrong way. Okay, interesting.
And then there was there's no dialogue or anything in it. It was just this kind of, not like dancey music as such, but there was like this electronic music. And it was really weird because every now and then there would be some lyrics by Roy Orbison thrown in. This is such a random thing. And so for 6 minutes, I was just sat there completely confused, had no idea where to look, just didn't know what was going on, which way was up.
So this is fascinating. And it's fascinating that you, as a consumer of this medium, were confused, because it's like, well, if anyone was going to kind of know, yeah, what to do, but what did your friend think? Did she
really enjoyed it. She really enjoyed it. And that was the thing. And it's like you say, it's because I was watching everyone else kind of before we got to sit down. Mm-hmm. And then I was watching everyone afterwards. And it was just made me realize that I must have probably been the only person in that had a completely different experience to everyone else. Mm. Because everyone else was pretty, they're pretty much just sort of sat there in their chair the whole time and then just occasionally looking around.
Yeah, so they were looking forward mainly. And was most of the action happening forward?
It was happening everywhere.
Okay.
But it was happening so quickly you couldn't follow it. But then when you did follow it, then it'd stop and then carry on somewhere else. So then you had to like run around trying to find it.
Oh, see, this is that is like one of my bugbears with 360. But having said that, I've had some interesting discussions with people about that technique of kind of like having lots going on, you know, in lots of different places. My opinion on it is really the only reason you would do that is if it's like a kind of marketing for 360 mobile kind of piece where you want someone to watch it lots and lots of times. Mm-hmm. I personally find it really annoying. Like I've got really bad FOMO. I don't want to watch it again. I just want to watch it once. But you say, kind of like know and be directed through the experience. So that's really interesting. But the fact that other people found it good, like
they enjoyed it, and I think they got it more than I did. Because I asked my friend afterwards, I was like, what was meant to be going on in that?
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem to be any storyline. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know, there isn't a storyline in a fashion film. Like, there's never anything specific going
what
on.
What was the point? It was just to look at the clothes, I guess.
Yeah, but this is the other thing as well. All of the colours in the video were inverted.
Right.
So it's almost like watching it like as like an infrared kind of thing or like an X-ray thing. So you couldn't even really make out the clothes. or what colour they were and stuff like that. So,
it was very strange. Like a weird, and okay, so it was like a weird kind of concept piece. And I wonder, was it like you did that experience and then you went and did something and that was like the kind of the primer to a location experience, or was like that it?
That was it.
That was it.
That was the entire thing. And then they also had another room where they had the big screen, but then they showed like a 2D version of it. And you're like, the 2D version still doesn't make sense. It makes more sense than this than doing it in VR, really.
That's so interesting. Okay, what's it called again? I'm going to Google it.
Google it. It's called Reality Inverse. Just Google Reality Inverse Serpentine Gallery.
Serpentine.
The best link on there is for Hypebeast.
The home of the fashion film link. And
I think it has like a YouTube version of the.
Oh yeah. The stuff. Okay.
It was just
explore
mental.
The reality inverse film in 360 degree vision. Also, it's interesting because it's like it looks like this is like the kind of style that this person does. In general, that's really strange. Listeners, I know it's not particularly exciting listening to someone looking online. I just want to see who the filmmaker is, just in case, just to see if we know her.
But the interest, like the funny thing about it is that I was literally just spinning around on the chair constantly because I was chasing what was going on, trying to find it, whereas no one else around me was doing that.
Okay,
so the staff there must have been watching me going, what the hell is he watching?
This guy's on crack.
But it was afterwards, like they come over and I was taking my headset off, and the guy was said to me, it's like, oh, like, did you enjoy it? And I was like, I don't.
How do you answer that?
So it's like, I was like, to be honest, mate, I don't really think I'm like the target audience.
Yeah.
For this, I was like, I don't really know what was going on. I was like, but the headset was comfy though.
Well, this what headset was it?
they were showing it on the Oculus Go.
Okay, nice. I love that I was like at the beginning of this, like, let's not make it about the tech. And I'm like, oh, but out of interest, what were they showing? And out of interest, was it a synchronized showing or was it a individual start?
No, it's individual.
So did you have to start it with a controller?
Yeah.
And did they come around and teach you how to do that? Even obviously you knew how to use it already.
That was their initial thing because they were taking people that hadn't used VR before through what to do. But it was like, have you used VR before? And I was like, oh, mate, I'm a pro.
Mate!
Just pass me the gear.
Come on. Bring me that Gear VR S6 setup.
You go take yourself a 6-minute break.
Yeah. You relax while I spin around on a chair.
Yeah. But it's weird. It was one of those things where you didn't actually know when it ended. Because there's still like this thing just like spinning around you. As it ended, it's only when I had to press things, see what the time was at.
Yeah.
To know that it was finished.
What do you mean? As in, like, it just kind of, were they showing it just in the Oculus Gallery or?
Yeah, yeah.
So you literally, it like the end screen was just.
Oh, no. It's just like, it was just, they just like had it on repeat.
Oh.
Well, they said they had it on the loop. So what they did was they just paused it at the end for the next person. And then the next person just has to hit play.
How bizarre. I'm fascinated by this because I think one of the big things with directing 360, one of the slight problems with it is you direct a piece differently depending on who your audience is. And so actually, yeah, that piece, like a lot of the stuff that you see at VR festivals is, I think, personally, mainly created with a early adopter, tech-savvy kind of, you know, most likely done VR before kind of mindset. So the way you direct that, I think, is totally different. Like, a lot of my commercial work ends up being quite, in terms of the directing, in terms of the shots, it's usually playing it quite safe, just because the general intended audience is a complete new to VR audience. But what fascinates me about that experience, by the sounds of it, is that sounds to me, given that it's showing at the Serpentine or Serpentine, how do you pronounce that?
I'm not sure. No. I just
it's
assume Serpentine.
Serpent something. Yeah. the fact that it's showing there makes me think that all of those things have been done really intentionally. And, you know, because it's like that classic, and I have this, I'll say lively debate rather than argument with friends of mine who are kind of artists, like visual artists, traditional kind of, you know, arts practice based. Because my argument is like anything can be art if you just like make it sound as if it's meant to be like that. Like, for example, yeah. With that piece, it's like, the intention is of the piece is to make you feel like overwhelmed, and you know, like the, you know, like consumerism is kind of, you know, pulling you this way and that way, and you're not really sure, you know, fashion is all about not knowing, you know, which way to, you know, you could really put some like bullshit artsy statement behind it, and all of a sudden it becomes a work of fucking art. Like, whereas, you know what I mean? Whereas if you showed that in the context of, oh, here you are, Nan, have a look at this film with no context and just like enjoy some VR, you'd be like, what is going on? what were some of the things that you think, you know, what were some of the key kind of like shots, or was it just a one shot? Like, what were some of the key directorial decisions that you did and didn't like, apart from the fact that obviously it was all over the place?
Well, that's the thing, it's like it was so all over the place, you couldn't really sort of pick anything out because it was all so quick.
Right.
And I literally just spent the whole time just trying to chase and try and find and figure out what was going on. So I didn't even really have time to sort of really digest any of it, because I was like, I just don't know what's happening.
Was it all, if you think about I'm assuming this is terrible of me to assume that the person in this fashion film is a woman, but was it a woman?
I think it was.
Yeah. So,
I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean, and
he was walking around a lot.
Let's say just to be safe. But that person, the person in the film, the subject of the film, if they were walking off, in hindsight, you were trying to follow them. But if you had stayed looking forward, do you think that all of the action would have been happening in front of you?
No, because I tried that.
Yeah.
Because I thought, maybe if I just don't move, then the action will just come back to me. And then it didn't. And there was nothing happening. I looked to my left. And then it was all going on over there.
That's so strange. So there wasn't, because I was thinking maybe it's like, you know, it was absolutely intended for a beginner's audience, knowing that they wouldn't look around. Mm. And so maybe that was the point. Oh, that's really weird.
I think the reason it was done is because I found out as well that London Fashion Week started on Friday.
Okay.
So I think it was probably just sort of trying to coincide with that, because that was pretty much like the audience in there, they were all like very much fashionistas, you know.
And you were there with your hat.
And I was there with my hat. So they were like, who's this homeless dude?
Looking around, expecting
the free VR.
Expecting this 360 to blow his mind.
Yeah. And why is he rummaging through the bins?
That's really okay. Well, that makes me want to kind of go and deep dive and look for like interviews and things with the filmmakers to see.
It's funny though. I think it should have come with like some sort of like health warning or something, because like if like epilepsy.
Oh really?
Like I think it was so. Yeah, it was so. Like flashing in your face and stuff, it could have easily potentially triggered someone.
Was it like multiple shots, or was it like one shot?
There were multiple shots at times, but a lot of the time they were happening at the same time.
What do you mean? So they were happening at the same time. So one way you were looking, and then another way was like a different shot.
So you'd have like, I don't know. There are times where you could have like three shots on the go. So one in front of you and then two like behind you.
Oh, so you're kind of like
oh, well, which one am I meant to be looking at? Because there'd be like some of the shots would have like nothing going on. Wow. It'd just be like a room with a piano in it.
But that's fashion. That's art. Woman,
well, hey, then I'm not cut out for this industry.
It's funny because I was literally editing a project with a choreographer on Tuesday, and it was really funny because I was like, we were looking through the rushes of this project that we'd shot, and I was like trying to skip through the timeline, and I was like, is he moving? Because it's like the subject of the film is like this guy who's like doing kind of like a contemporary freestyle dance, and and I'm like, is he moving? And she goes, that's contemporary dance. I was like, oh God. I was like, I'm not cut out for this art world. But it's interesting because that project, and this, I guess this is another reason why this has kind of been on my brain recently, is that project was commissioned by this kind of a research institute as part of the university to explore like an experiment with 360 in dance. And the whole point of it, the whole point of the practice, was to literally throw out the rule book of everything that any of us had learned in the years that we've been working in our fields. Because it was like a sound designer, me as a 360 filmmaker, a dancer who's like a professional freestyle contemporary dancer, and then choreographer, producer kind of type. And yeah, the whole point was to bring our disciplines together, but to kind of challenge each other on why we were doing certain things. Or like, you know, for example, at one point I like hung the kandao, the kukam, off of like an unstabilized boom pole, essentially, like on an angle in the weirdest, you know, the weirdest kind of angle that you'd ever like. And it's just a shot that I would just never, ever do. Like, why would you do that shot?
Yeah.
And we got it into the edit and it's a really, really cool shot. And like the way that we'd like lit the environment, because we were as all contemporary dance pieces, we shot it in an abandoned basement, of course, so it's it's all lit like really quite stylistically. And so actually the kind of the way that the shot, especially because it's stereo, because we shot it in 180, the way that you're kind of seeing the separation of the dancer and the shadow is super interesting. And that made me think, like, you know, I would have never have tried that shot before, because you know, when you're creating something with an end audience in mind, that absolutely influences your process, which, you know, for a commercial point of view and for making something that's, you know, watchable and, you know, piece where people don't leave going, what the fuck was that about?
Well, at least one person.
You know, I think, I can't remember what the point was, I was going on a right tangent there, but, you know, I think there needs to be more experimenting with directing to find those things that do and don't work. But again, it's difficult because it's like, well, I can watch that shot unstabilized stereo because I'm, you know, I'm fairly used to VR now, and luckily I don't get, you know, I know some people really suffer with eye strain and things like that when you shoot in stereo. Luckily I don't, so it's fine. But you know, when it comes to choosing a piece of content to show to the public, that's a completely different ball game. So yeah, it's very interesting. Did you manage to watch Traveling While Black?
No.
Okay. No, I'm going to talk
about it. So go for it, because I'm really interested in this.
Yeah, so Traveling While Black premiered at Sundance last month, and it's the latest VR documentary by Felix and Paul, who are notoriously, you know, kind of known as the gods of cinematic VR, if you will. And what I thought, okay, so there's kind of like two parts to this. There's like the part of me that was watching it as a kind of, yeah, someone interested in directing like VR and how they approach that. And then there was the other part of me that was just as a kind of consumer experiencing it. So from a consumer point of view, I thought it, see this thing, I'm not really a massive documentaries person. Like, I'm much more a kind of drama, escapism, comedy, that kind of person. And Traveling While Black is essentially a VR documentary, which looks at, you know, the history of racism in America, and kind of also exploring some kind of like contemporary, kind of like, I can't really describe it. It's basically like interviews with people who are obviously like older now, but they're kind of recounting their memories of, you know, the dangers and like, the, you know, some of the horrible things they were subjected to whilst traveling because they were Black in America. But then it kind of, not to spoil it for anyone, but it kind of comes full circle when they kind of have an interview with someone who's kind of been affected by, you know, a recent example of being mm-hmm. black in America. And so I guess, you know, the kind of the end thought as a, as a, you know, just an audience member is like, holy shit. I mean, you know, we all know it's bad, and we all kind of like, especially, you know, us two, we are white, like we are British, like we could never fathom what it's like to be someone black living in America in this day and age. But it was really interesting to kind of hear the history of it as well. But so from an audience point of view, I found myself, even though I don't like documentaries really, I found myself getting totally sucked into it, and totally I thought that VR was the perfect medium for it, because I thought, even though there's not much happening in terms of, you know, movement of the camera, and I'll get onto that in a second, the way that they kind of created those scenes, and the way that they kind of positioned extras, and the way that you were kind of like, so you're like, the majority of it, the interviews and the kind of the, I guess, the action, if you will, that's probably the wrong word, but kind of happens in this diner. You're sitting kind of at a table with an interviewee. And funnily, what I thought was really interesting is they didn't have the subject talking directly to the camera. You were like, you were at the booth with them, and you were kind of, it's almost like you were the quiet friend that was just listening in on the conversation. That was really interesting, I thought, because I've not seen that done so well, because it definitely, because you definitely felt like, I'm kind of intruding on this, but at the same time, it feels a safe space, because it doesn't feel as aggressive as someone talking to you directly.
Yeah.
But what I loved, what I thought they did so well was, you know, there was only really, I don't know, maybe 10 shots in the whole film. But what was interesting is they kept coming back to this shot in the diner where you were at this... you're at the table. And if you look to your right, where, you know, if you think of like a traditional American diner, they have like the kind of the mirrors stripped kind of like across the wall. And they made such good use of that kind of like essentially the back 180 of the frame by having kind of like things appear in that mirror. So, for example, there's this bit where this elder gentleman is kind of like talking about his experience of like getting a bus, and you kind of, you know, you're at the table watching him, and as his kind of like in his elder form talking about the experience. But then if you looked in the mirror to the right of you, you see kind of like a dramatization of what he went through. So it's kind of like this young kind of like man in a bus, like looking out the window, and you're like, you can see like, you know, essentially the mirror becomes like the windows of the bus. And I hope I'm painting a picture that does it justice, because honestly it was so powerful, even though it was so simple. And I came out of it thinking, well, you know, realistically, they've not done anything like drastically impressive in terms of like, you know, like you look at the likes of Riot, for example, who are really kind of like in their pieces, like Dinner Party, they're kind of like doing all sorts of crazy stuff with like their camera movements and integrating like CGI, and like they're doing really kind of like spectacle kind of stuff, I would say. Whereas this piece kind of knew what it was. The subject of it was powerful enough for you to not need the gimmicks. And actually, it was just that classic thing of just giving you the sensation of being there and allowing you to focus completely on this subject, which I thought was so, so powerful. I would highly, highly recommend watching it. But again, what I thought was clever about it is Felix and Paul are all about, you know, from what I can gather, they're all about appealing to a mass audience, right? They want to kind of, they're not creating VR content for the VR audience, although obviously, you know, it plays well with VR audiences, and it does the rounds of the kind of the VR film festivals and things like that. But realistically, because I think that piece was kind of, oh, I can't remember who the main documentary filmmaker was. Let me just quickly look it up, because it's really bad to not reference him, because Felix and Paul from what I gather are like the technical partner on it, and I think it was co-commissioned by I've just like put Travelling While and it's automatically filled in pregnant. Travelling While Black VR, there it is. Yeah, it was co-commissioned by the New York Times, I think. Let me have a look. Roger Ross Williams is the director. Oh, an Academy Award winning director.
Oh, there you go.
Again, documentary is not really my realm, so hence not knowing that right off the bat. But anyway, they were appealing to a really big audience, which I think led into, you know, the reason why they weren't trying to be overly aggressive with what they were kind of trying to do with the camera movement and the directing. But also what was interesting, just another point that I picked up on, was I'm a big believer that, and I think most, you know, most 360 directors would agree that 360 is much more like theatre than it is film.
Yeah, yeah.
And so actually it's all about how do you set up that scene? How do you kind of, you know, how are you positioning people? And what was really interesting is at the beginning, when you're in the diner, everyone's kind of going about their own business. Like everyone, you know, you're in that conversation, but then there's like lots of other people in the diner that are just kind of, you know, eating or like chatting away, you know, like just classic extra stuff. But as the subject got more and more kind of serious, as you were kind of being kind of brought up to date with the fact that, you know, this is still happening, they had everyone in the diner all focusing on what was happening. I was just thinking
that as you were saying it.
Yeah. And it worked so well, because not only does it give this sense of like, you know, this is really important that everyone kind of pays attention to this. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like there's nothing to distract you in that moment. You have to kind of engage with what this lady is telling you about what happened to her son. But yeah, so overall, that was a long ramble, but overall, a really simple way of directing, but super, super effective, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think like what you say about the extras and stuff, that when you sort of really think about it, that's such a, like a small idea, but that's so powerful.
Massively.
When they pull it off, I'm looking forward to what. Where's that on?
You can just download it for free on Go or Gear. I think it's across all of the big platforms. It's a free app. If you just search Travelling While Black. But then on the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, I watched The Limit. Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it. That's the Robert Rodriguez one, isn't it?
Yes. And what have you heard about it?
It's all done to like your, I don't know, it's like an actioner, isn't it? That's all I've seen the trailer.
Yeah.
From
the trailer, what impression do you get of what the content's going to be, out of interest?
Well, it's Robert Rodriguez, so it's going to be like all out action packed stuff, but there's probably a slight sci-fi element or, I don't know. It kind of looked in a way similar to, obviously without the zombies or whatever they were, but like Planet Terror. I don't know if you ever saw Planet Terror.
No, I don't think so.
When him and Tarantino did like a grindhouse double bill thing.
No, so I didn't see that.
Planet Terror and Tarantino did Death Proof.
Oh. So
it's like, yeah, like a homage to the kind of double features that they used to show in like drive-in movies in the States.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it kind of had, I don't know, it had that sort of similar feel, obviously without the grainy film look.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like a sort of first-person actioner kind of.
Well, that's exactly it. So all I knew about it going into it was, and again, I'm not a documentary person and I'm not a cinephile. So like I knew the name Robert Rodriguez, and because I listened to a lot of filmmaking podcasts, I'd heard...
Have you ever read Rebel Without a Crew, the book he did?
I've not read it, but I've heard like many an interview about it and like the kind of, five top tips and stuff. Yeah, because he made his first feature film for like $5,000, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Just from money that he got from like testing medical supplies.
Yeah, I love that. Like,
which is set himself as a human guinea pig.
Yeah, just like Kevin Smith, like max out like 20 grand's worth of credit cards to make Clerks or something. Yeah, good old indie film. But essentially, so all I knew was that he was like an indie film legend. And, you know, it's very in his wheelhouse to try out new things. Mm. So going into it, I didn't know that it was a 180 film. I thought it was a 360.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's it. So the marketing around it not that it should really matter. Well, it's more than 180 actually, because it's about, they shot it on the Red with a giant Entenia lens. So it's like, it's probably like a 220 or a 280 film. So essentially, that was super interesting because, like, when you first get into the experience, you look behind you and you're in, like, I think they call it the surreal cinema or the surreal theater or something. So you're like at a cinema screen. And then obviously you look forward and you're part of the action. Yeah. Here's the thing. I thought, wow, I've never, like, genuinely never seen anything like it done in VR before. Mm-hmm. It was so unique. It was so daring. It was literally, again, one of those things of let's rip up the rule book. Well, he didn't even know the rule book of VR because he literally was coming to it fresh. It's like literally forget everything that you thought you knew about it, and I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want, basically. Now, in some ways, that's really cool and really liberating. I felt sick instantly because the way that it's shot is, he will move the camera to make you look at things. So if you imagine you're sitting looking forward, but so you're still looking forward, but the camera then whip pans to something happening. And so as you can imagine, and it's like, and it is crazy, crazy full on action, like, you know, from a drive-by shooting situation to getting thrown out of a burning aeroplane. Like, it is, you know, falling to your death. It's like, it's the whole nine yards, being in a fight scene. Like, there's all this kind of like, it's genuinely the most crazy experience I've ever done. And I would highly recommend everyone do it. Although, warning, if you are sensitive to like fast-paced moving or nausea in a headset, this will absolutely set you off. Thank God it was one of the last things I watched on that Sunday because I felt sick for the rest of the evening. But yeah, so essentially it's like 180 and like they're like, he's like whipping the camera around because it's all first-person point of view. Mm-hmm. So I thought, that's really interesting because the one big thing that we haven't quite, that I think VR works best when you as a director imagine that the camera is a person. I think whether that be a voyeur that you're kind of embodying or an actual character in the story that someone is talking to, works best when you pretend that, you know, when someone puts on the headset and they become a person. But to go that extra step and to not have any agency, you know, essentially, it's just an absolute eye fucking.
that's a quote for the poster. I've never heard one. The limit. It's an absolute eye fucking.
They can quote me on that one.
That's amazing.
It's weird because I thought, naturally, I was totally curious as to what people thought about it afterwards. So I did two routes. I wanted to see, I knew that it would have got an absolute slating from the VR community. So first of all, naturally went to Facebook and saw the absolute royal ripping that, one of the people that worked for the company that made it with Robert Rodriguez was the one that posted it on the Facebook group. And literally, like, you get halfway down this thread and he's like, Jesus Christ. Like, it is brutal. But then what I was more interested in is what did the average person think of it? And so if you look at the comments on Steam, I think it is, which is the one where you can download it to Vive and Rift. It's fascinating because it's about 50-50 from what I remember. Some people were kind of congratulating it and saying, you know, wow, you know, again, like this has never been done before. You know, you've got to think that the audience on Steam are more likely to be gamers than they are like film kind of.
They're more the target audience really for that kind of content.
Yeah. So half of them were like, you know, I've never seen anything like this. This is brilliant. Some people were just giving it positive reviews to be like, this was a shit show, but I really want to see more content like this. And like, you know, so keep on making it. And then the other half was like, kind of the experience that I think most people had, which was it felt, and then it was confirmed by an interview I watched with Robert Rodriguez about it, that he had edited this without watching it in a headset.
Oh, wow.
And that's apparently what, I mean, God knows why on earth they, you know, he didn't have that setup, or, you know, but I think he was editing it. From what I gather from this interview, he was editing it himself, and then he was sending it to his son, who is a massive VR gamer, and he was the one that was saying, oh yeah, you know, this is great, do this though, or add this, or do this. And and yeah, by the sounds of it, I mean, obviously he must have watched it in a headset at some point, but essentially, it, from what I gather, it was very obvious that he'd not really considered the end audience in this. So yeah. What's your opinion on directors doing that this early on in the medium?
See, I've always been a big fan of Rodriguez ever since back in the day. I was like a big fan of El Mariachi. And again, it's a solid film regardless of the budget and things like that. And, you know, he's always been known to, like, you know, push the envelope and try new things and stuff. We won't go into Spy Kids, but... We'll leave that out. But yeah, so I don't know, I'm kind of intrigued, but again, from the trailer, you can see that it's obviously going to be a fast-paced experience, and I think that's the one thing I was kind of hesitant about watching it, because I didn't want to have my eyes fucked. So
you will get your eyes fucked.
But I don't know. Now I'm kind of intrigued by it.
You've got to do it.
Literally, if that quote was on the poster, then that would have sold me.
You've got to do it, and you've got to painstakingly wait for the 4 gig file to download.
How long is it?
I want to say 20 minutes. It might have only been 10, but no, I think maximum, I think it was about 20.
Your eyes felt like it was 20 minutes.
Jesus, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, narratively, I thought he was absolutely along the right lines. Like, you have a character, you've got, you know, there's a really established storyline. There's obviously brilliant acting, because you've got Michelle Rodriguez and Norman, can't remember his name. Yes, from Walking Dead. You know, so all of that stuff, like, and obviously, like, the production value is incredible. Oh. You know, that it's super high quality. The locations and the extra, everything about it, the CGI, everything was as you would expect from a Hollywood director.
So
I mean, you've got to watch it, you've just got to, and then we're going to talk about it again at a future date on this podcast
when I'm blind.
Yeah, exactly. But so that's the thing, it's kind of like, well, you know, podcasting lends itself. That's terrible. Let's not go down that road. I think, you know, in terms of pushing the envelope with, in terms of quality of storytelling, in terms of creating content that is native to immersive, I thought absolutely massive tick, you know, 10 out of 10. But the problem is, I think, again, if even half the VR community can't watch it without getting sick, what chance do we have of this breaking mainstream? And actually, more importantly, if someone that really loved Robert Rodriguez, this was like, oh, I've got to go see the new Robert Rodriguez VR film. If they then had this encounter with it and thought, holy shit, like, that was impressive, but wow, does my head feel like shit. Yeah. Then we have to ask, what's that doing for the industry as a whole? Like, it can only be a good thing that, you know, these bigger kind of characters and these, you know, really established, you know, talented people with, let's face it, with the money behind them, are getting into this field. That can only be a good thing for us. But does it jeopardize making it mainstream. I don't know. I'm just kind of putting all of the opinions out there. I'd be really interested to hear from anyone else that has watched it and, you know, hear all their opinions.
Yeah, but yeah. I might have a look at that later, actually.
Do it, and then text me. Text me a GIF that summarizes your opinion.
Oh, I like that. That's a challenge.
And we will post that GIF on Twitter. Anyone interested?
Just a GIF review.
So let's round it off with maybe some things that you would say that you've learned from experience, or things that you kind of consider when you direct a 360 piece.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, this another one I watched very, very quickly was a documentary called Race to Alaska.
Oh, I've not heard of that one. Where was that?
It was on Jaunt.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I like a doc on the flip side. Not as fast paced as the limit by the sounds of it. There was no
eye fuckery happening here.
So that was handy. It's basically about these two sailors that like go on a journey from Australia to Canada by like boat with no motor, and no support.
Wow.
And I think it's like, I don't know, I'm just reading it now, 750 miles. Like, that could be interesting. And, you know, the scenery when you get to Alaska, that'd be incredible. The way it's shot, so they have a few of the interviews with the people at the beginning, and they're talking directly to the camera. It almost feels like, I mean, it feels like you're there with them, and then they're kind of taking you through what they're doing. So it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like it's your first day on the job.
Oh, cool.
Kind of thing, and you're watching and, almost learning the ropes from them. And then as it goes on, then it sort of kind of changes from that. And then they're just talking about like the journey so far and what's been happening and things like that. The only thing with it though, is that it felt like it needed to be slightly more cinematic. And it didn't really feel like that. It felt quite...
In what sense?
With something like that, when you got sort of, these two small boats, going across the sea to Alaska and also arriving to Alaska, like all the scenery you got, you need like some of these cinematic drone shots, I felt.
Yeah.
To really show off the scale of what they were trying to pull off. And then on top of that, when they got to Alaska, they got there at night. So you couldn't really see anything.
So a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah. And it was, okay. I don't know, it's kind of...
Did they do that intentionally, do you think, because they wanted you to constantly feel like you were, a member of the crew rather than...
But it did feel like an anticlimax, because at the end, one of the sailors like talks about how all these locals came to meet them, to congratulate for making it all their way. But you can't actually see that because it's too dark.
Oh.
So you can kind of hear it. You can kind of hear some sort of cheering in the background. But other than that, you wouldn't know if she hadn't have told you. So that's, I don't know. It's weird.
Interesting.
For me, if that was me, I would have just kind of put that off and made it during the day.
Yeah,
so you can sort of get that,
taking a bit of liberty.
Take that scenery in, and also see these people that have come to sort of cheer him in. I don't know. Don't get me wrong. It was interesting, and I'm terrified of sort of swimming in the sea to a degree. I don't like not knowing what's underneath me. So the thought of doing that with no motor stuff is just terrifying.
It's a feat in itself, the actual, what they're doing.
I don't know, it just sort of felt like it could have done with a bit more in terms of cinematography. And also on top of that as well, when they, a lot of times they had put the camera like on the roof of the boat, and when the water's choppy, that sort of made you feel a bit nauseous. Because obviously in the thing, you're bouncing around all over the place, but in reality you're not.
See, that's quite interesting because I don't think, obviously, there's like the practical point of view of like, it's never good to make someone feel nauseous because otherwise they won't want to watch, you know, your content. But at the same time, I guess that for me feels a bit like, well, that's kind of really making you feel as if you were there because you would feel like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I quite like that from like a directorial perspective, kind of really giving you the experience of actually being there. But it's interesting that almost you want it. Yeah, it's kind of, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I'm not a huge fan of, I'm not a massive fan of people, well, I don't know. I'm just not a huge fan on kind of experiences that chop and change between you being a person and then you being just like a camera floating.
Yeah, yeah,
like
absolutely.
Whether that be just, yeah, like changing the shot or whether you're like cutting to a random drone shot. I'm not, I don't know. I'm just, that's not my taste personally. Mm. But I was speaking at this event the other week and the speaker before me, Dan Tucker, who is the curator for Sheffield Dockfest here in the UK, which is like a big, they've got a big kind of immersive reality. It's called the Alternate Realities Program, which is, you know, one of the kind of most prestigious, I think, XR related programs in the film festival world. Yeah. And he was talking about how in general 360 experiences fall into the categories of be there or be them. And I thought that was a really simple but super poignant way of summarizing, you know, that first directorial decision that you make when you go into a 360 piece. Am I trying to create a sense, like from what you're saying, I imagine that that film would have worked really nicely as a be there because it's the journey, it's the actual journey of it. And it's the place that you're going and it's the there-ness of it. It's the location. It's the kind of, you know, it's the scenery. It's all of that. That's the thing that's impressive. That's the reason you're doing it in 360 because you really want to give a sense of being there. Whereas something like The Limit is like absolutely like a be them kind of scenario. And, you know, and to a certain extent, Traveling While Black, even though you are not a character, you are absolutely kind of, it's more about be them, be kind of, be a part of that conversation, be the voyeur who is sitting there like the quiet friend. You've got a persona. So I think that's, I mean, I don't know your opinion on that, but I think that's a super interesting way of kind of boiling down that really important decision.
I really like that. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it either. And I was just like, that's genius. It's so simple, but so true.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's weird. It depends. Obviously, it depends on the content and stuff. But yeah, that, I don't know. That, because see, I don't mind. I think there was like an ad that 360 had that someone did for Thailand, and it was kind of like it was just following this one guy through his, you know, travels through Thailand stuff, but it was treated as though you was there with him. So there'd be occasions where he'd like, you know, gesture you to sort of come with him on his journey, but then every now and then they'd mix in like a drone shot, and I felt it quite like it worked quite seamlessly.
Oh, that's nice. What was it called? Or is it just like a 360 Thailand?
I think it was Amazing Thailand or something like that. If you YouTube
Thailand Find Your Journey, Amazing Thailand in 360 Virtual Reality, is that it?
Yeah, well, okay, hang on, let's have a look. Thailand 360. Find Your Journey.
Cool, I'm going to watch that afterwards.
So yeah, that was actually, I thought that was done really well. But then if you watch, I don't know if you've seen, I think come out last year, that one that was done for Japan.
No.
And that was, I don't know, it felt like rather than showcasing Japan, it was showcasing like the culture as opposed to the country, whereas Thailand is showcasing the country itself. But that was when you was kind of thrown in all these different viewpoints and stuff. So like 1 minute, you know, you're inside one of those grabber machines that you get at the arcade, and these two guys are trying to win you.
Oh, wow. And, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. It was nice to feel wanted. But then, like, next minute, then you're just like a normal human size about to go up against a sumo wrestler. Or another time you're
That's really interesting. On a train. What's that one called?
Let me Google that one.
Japan, where tradition meets the future. Is that?
That could be it. Yeah, that's the one. But you look at that on like YouTube. That's like 5.8 million views.
That's amazing.
But then how many of that has been on a headset?
Well, I had an off the record conversation with someone recently, so I can't credit who kind of mentioned this, okay. But apparently, and this was like done on a very small scale. This is not like this is not a statement by any means from Facebook or Google, but I hear through the grapevine that about 95% of 360 content, or 95% of the time, 360 content on Facebook and YouTube is watched on mobile or desktop. Really? So it's not being watched in a headset.
See, that 5%. Makes me really sad.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's one thing I do. Whenever I shoot anything, I only shoot for the headset.
Yeah, like, same.
It annoys me the thought that someone might watch it on a desktop.
Yeah, because it's kind of, I'm in absolute agreement, which is why I don't personally post any of my stuff online. Mm. And people ask me for it constantly, and especially like, obviously clients want to see stuff. Yeah. But I just always say I'll show you a demo in person in a headset, because like you say, I think it's a totally different medium in my opinion.
Yeah, it is, because like the whole point of 360 is that you don't have like a frame, but then you're watching it on a browser. Yeah. You've got that frame, so it's not immersive. It would annoy me knowing someone that watched something of mine on a browser. I'd lose sleep over it, I think.
I've just like ruined your sleep for the rest of the year
up.
Then.
I'd turn up at their door with a headset. Like, please, for the love of God, just watch it on this now.
This is where I break the terrible news that I watched your VIA horror interactive story on desktop.
I'm cutting this call off now.
That's it. This is it. We made it 12 episodes, of which I think I did about 3.
Until you come up with the ultimate insult. Yeah. That's not how it was intended, Alex.
I know. The thing is, for me, and this again, this was one of the reasons why I started that Facebook thread to begin with, was I do genuinely like consume quite a lot of 360 content, especially, you know, when people kind of tweet about it or post about it on Facebook, you know, post links to their latest work. I am engaging with that content. It's just I'm not watching it in a headset. I'm watching it on desktop because it's easy. That's the truth. The thing is, though, I in my head, and it's not a good enough excuse, because ultimately, if we are building this industry, we need to be advocates for it. But my excuse is always, I've done so much 360, and now I know because I edit, because I think we talked about this on the last one, because the workflow for 360, if you've not got a beastie PC with an Oculus Rift, is a nightmare. I'm so used to now looking at a 360 frame and knowing what that looks like in a headset. So I forgive myself a little bit, because I can watch stuff and know what that's going to feel. Of course, it's like absolutely nowhere near as immersive as the actual experience is intended, but
a longer route with my workflow. Like I'll excuse me, I'll like edit, I'll watch it on a headset, and then when I've got to a point where I think, okay, I'm happy with this, then I'll get someone else to watch it, and then I'll watch them watch it.
Because then I know
at that point I know the beats, so I know at what point, like where they should be looking, like how long into it. So then by watching them, I can tell if they're looking in the right direction.
That's amazing.
Point.
That is the gem of this whole of this whole podcast. You should use that as the marketing.
Should have just opened
so
with that.
Genius.
Should have just
opened
with that.
That's such an obvious thing to do, but it's so, that's genius. That tells you whether you're doing the right, you know, your job right as a director.
Yeah. And it's weird, because like you literally, by the time you've drilled it down to a point where you're happy with it, it's really strange that without even like hearing the beats, all you know is that they've hit play. You don't even have to hear like the music or anything that's going on to like know the beats. You just kind of know from watching it so many times in a headset and just drilling it down that you know exactly at what point you're like, right, okay, they should be looking this way now, or they should be like looking behind them at this point.
But it's interesting, and this is a whole nother tangent which we can't afford to go on because I've got to shoot. I feel like I end every podcast episode with like, right, gotta go.
You're so, a busy lass.
I am. I would say that is a fascinating discussion. Maybe that should be our next topic potentially. Is it's so interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, well, surely the one of the key benefits of doing something in 360 is that you give your audience agency, but actually as a director you don't want them to have agency. You want them to think they have agency, but actually you're very carefully, it's a bit like being a magician, you're very carefully curating where they should be looking. But it's just kind of like misdirection. They think they can look anywhere, but they can't. You've done your job right. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting when, because obviously I'm hosting this pop-up cinema for the BFI at the moment, and it's fascinating to watch a slightly larger group of people all watching something in sync and seeing how many of them are looking the same way. Yeah. Because often it is about, I'd say 70% of people are looking the same way, and then you've got 10% of people that are rebel viewers, usually younger, admittedly, that will just be looking everywhere. Yeah. They'll be the ones that are just trying to like look everywhere and see, you know, if anything's going on. And then 20% of people that are just like looking completely different direction, and you're like,
It's funny because I find that, you know, it's always said that with traditional video, you need like that first few seconds to sort of really grab people. And I always feel like kind of with 360, that's the opposite. I kind of feel like those first like couple of shots maybe, is that just, that's for me to sort of just give them time to sort of get the looking around out of their system.
Yeah, to
and
play
then,
to,
and
to
then
kind of
crack on with it. So it's like, right, okay, for this, like, you know, first couple, you just do whatever you want.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then afterwards, I'm taking back the reins here. And you're looking where I want you to look.
100%. Like, I did Keyed, like, you know, ages ago now, like end of 2016. But there's literally like a 30 second, considering it's only like a 7 minute film, there's like 30 seconds of it where there's one character stood in front of you and nothing happens for 30 seconds because that allows you to like look around, like have your little kind of, and again, obviously we made that, you know, I was really early in my VR career at that point, and Chloe, who was like, you know, directing the action on the day, like, you know, very much kind of like, creating it with that kind of mindset without knowing anything about VR. That was the first thing that, and only thing actually, that Chloe's directed in VR, but it just felt natural to give someone that time to explore. And I think that's again a really good point. But anyway, I said that I gotta go, and I really gotta go. But
okay, so let everyone know where they can find you online.
Find me at Alex Makes VR on all of the platforms. Instagram and Twitter is where you'll find me most. Obviously, very active in all the Facebook groups as well. So you should join some of them if you fancy.
Word G. And then myself at Daniel K. Hatton on all the social medias as per.
And let us know if you indeed have an eye fucking this week.
And on that note,
bye everyone.
Cool. See you later.